You've tuned into the Crispy Noodle Podcast.
Do you realize what you've done?
With Rich Lee Big.
Are you hip to the rap music?
And Michael Costanzo.
The internet was speaking to me in tongues.
Unplanned, unscripted, and slightly unhinged.
Good times, noodle salad.
The point is, you now have the ability to be happy.
And now, here's Rich and Mike on the Crispy Noodle Podcast.
Woo! Yeah! How you guys doing?
What's up, everybody?
It's time for this week's episode of the Crispy Noodle Podcast. Let us be the crispy noodle in your vegetarian salad of life and boring news, folks. It's our job to give you the most interesting tidbits in the world of sports, entertainment, odd news, and whatever else we happen to stumble across. Isn't that right, Mike?
That's right. We bring it to you with our unique sense of humor and wackiness. You never know what you're going to get here on the Crispy Noodle Podcast.
That's right. We have a few topics prepared for you, but sometimes we'll go off the beaten path and go on a topic of our own or a random discussion, and we go from there.
That's right.
We're pioneers into the podcasting world.
Boldly going where no podcast has gone before.
Maybe.
To my kitchen.
Yes, that's right. Actually, you're right.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, so take that. Nobody else has ever recorded a podcast here in Mike's kitchen.
That is something we can actually say.
So take that, world.
Yeah.
You don't got a kitchen.
Yeah.
You don't got a studio kitchen.
That's right.
What? That's what you
have. Other podcasts are just jealous.
Right. You know,
like they don't have our style.
They got fancy studios and padded walls and the soundproofing.
None of that.
Nope. We are live here in a kitchen.
That's right.
Take that. I like it, though. It adds a little charm to it.
It's very homey.
Especially whenever your mom comes on and has to chime in on something we're saying.
I always love that. That is something that no other podcast has.
Yes.
Is when random people roam through the kitchen and occasionally stop to talk about what we're talking about.
Yes. So.
It's a fairly regular occurrence.
Yes. So the point is, we're a unique show. And we thank you for tuning in on this week's episode. We do have a lot to get to in sports, entertainment, and odd news. But before we do, we like to do a little personal bit to let you know what we're up to in our lives. Let's see. Who you want to go first? Or you want me to go first?
I'll go first.
Okay. So it's funny because I'm still a part of this.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's why I figured I'd go first, because the big thing that I wanted to talk about is the HBO miniseries Chernobyl.
Yes.
It just wrapped up earlier this week. And
it's amazing.
Oh man, it was absolutely fantastic. We talked about it. I featured it in This Week in Entertainment before it started. And then, of course, Rich...
And I tipped you off?
Rich took my excellent advice.
No.
And he started watching the miniseries.
I tipped you off to this. I saw the trailer for this when this first came out. I'm like, this looks amazing.
I have audio proof of me talking about it in the show, so...
Okay, good for you.
Anyway, we both
actually, after watching Chernobyl, you don't need proof. You can say whatever you want.
That's right.
The radiation totally safe.
Yeah, absolutely. What is it? 3.6 Rotgen?
Yeah.
Oh, it's not good, but it's not bad.
Right. Not great, not terrible.
Right.
Yeah, is the line, yeah.
I love the memes that are popping up online of it. Like, that's when you know something has made it. As I was in a Reddit thread and somebody referenced that. It's not great, but not terrible. I was like, that is a reference to Chernobyl,
which is
really bizarre.
Yep.
But it has that type of cultural penetration where I feel like it's one of those miniseries that could go on to do good things in terms of critical acclaim and awards seasons, you know, when it comes.
Oh, I thought you meant like actual like morality good.
No, I mean, that'll never change.
Because in my opinion, this is a series that has a great moral underpinning to it.
And, oh, absolutely, but...
And if I was in charge of the education system, this would be among the top that students should watch.
Just in general?
It doesn't matter what
class it is, you gotta watch Chernobyl?
I have developed a core set of movies and films and TV shows...
Good Lord.
...that I think all children and kids should watch.
It's
and
just
one of them's Chernobyl.
It's just every Joe Pesci film, The Godfather, and now Chernobyl. Rich,
sure.
I know your curriculum.
I think I have a pretty good curriculum.
I mean, it's good for one specific genre of gangster films and one historical miniseries
and life lessons.
I mean, to a certain degree, yes.
And you're also leaving out Star Wars. Star Wars,
of course.
Yes, of course. Mandatory.
That's right. Of course. what's funny? You always say, well, obviously you're one of the biggest Star Wars fans I know, but you always reference the Mafia movies more than Star Wars, I feel
do
like.
Do I?
You do, yes. People that know Rich will be able to back me up on this. I feel like you reference
Mafia movies.
You reference
more than I do
Mafia
Star Wars?
Movies more than Star Wars, I think. Huh. Yeah,
I guess maybe because Star Wars everybody knows. Mafia movies are a little bit
Mafia movies
smaller.
Only you know.
That's a good point too. Yeah, there are also Mafia movies I only know. So maybe that's it. Anyway, to go back to Chernobyl.
Yes, Chernobyl is fantastic.
Absolutely fantastic.
I do agree
series.
With you to a point. Everybody should watch this. It is really, really good and really chilling.
Yes.
And haunting. And I love the fact that, you know, you had said this when you first started watching it, and I absolutely agree that it gets, you know, the stuff that everybody knows out of the way, like the nuclear power plant blew up, yada, yada, yada. And it gets into the nitty-gritty details that nobody knows, you know, the personal stories, the scientific elements of it, the lasting repercussions, telling those sad stories of the no-name individuals that helped to save, you know, what could have been a global catastrophe from happening.
Right.
And that's what was so fascinating and haunting throughout the whole thing.
And it's something that I don't think people realize. I didn't realize the scope of it. If things went to the worst case scenario with Chernobyl, you're talking about Asia as a continent is like gone.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting you bring that up because I actually read an article about it recently that talked about how there are still repercussions of it. There is there's a berry farm in Ukraine where the berries have radiation, higher levels of radiation still to this day.
Yeah.
And those berries are being shipped to the EU and government officials say it's a safe level of radiation in them. But, like, it makes you think, like, man, the repercussions of this are still being felt in everyday life for certain parts of the world. Imagine how much worse it could have been.
Right.
I mean, like, they're saying that because the ice caps are melting, it's releasing radioactive fallout that had been stored in them after the catastrophe, and it's now leaching into the oceans. Like, it's just wild.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And I'm getting all, like, weird, goofy scientific, but... Like, no, that's super fascinating.
That's the point of this show is, yeah. We need to pay attention to, you know, to these things that are happening in the world of science.
Absolutely.
And there needs to be clear and transparent information. And that's what
transparency's the key word.
Right. That's what the heart of this show is about, is just all the lies that the Soviet Union was trying to cover up to make the people more calm and just go about your lives. Don't worry, everything's fine.
That's really, I mean, yes, it was about the disaster, and yes, it was about the harrowing stories of the people that sacrificed to save the day. But really, when you think about the framing of it, it begins and ends with a conversation about the truth and lies.
Yeah.
That's how it started, and that's how it ended. And that's really what it's all about. The lengths that Russia went to cover it up and risk almost everything, and in a weird sort of way, parallels the lies we tell ourselves now to try and, you know, push aside the things that we'd rather not pay attention to.
Yep. I just want to play that quick moment that that Mike referenced in the first episode where he talks about lying and the truth and everything about Chernobyl. It's a great line from the first episode here.
What does matter is that to them, justice was done. Because, you see, to them, a just world is a sane world. There was nothing sane about Chernobyl. What happened there, what happened after, even the good we did, all of it, madness.
Yes. Mm. And boy, that just sets the tone for what the show is about.
Yeah.
You know, of course, you know, Chernobyl and the nuclear fallout and all that stuff is part of it. But really, the heart of this series was just, you know, the cost of lies and just, you know, the lie on top of another lie on top of another lie on top of another lie. And it just made the whole disaster worse.
It really did.
But yet at the same time, people were so heroic and were so brave that it stopped it from being the worst case scenario.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a great show. And I know there's, I know a lot of people don't like to think about it. You know, some people are like,
It's very heavy. It's very sad.
Right.
It's not something. It's like, oh, I want to go watch that show about people dying of radiation poisoning.
I made a joke about that to you when I saw the trailer. I was like, oh my God, I can't wait to watch Chernobyl. And you're like, that's not really something you should be saying. But you know, it's something that I think though, it makes it worthy. The acting is great. The storyline is great in this. The cinematography is great. They recreated, I think, most of Chernobyl and Pripyat as accurately as they could without actually going into Pripyat and Chernobyl.
Yeah.
It's just well done. And if you haven't seen it, I think you're missing out hugely. I think this is going to win all the awards come Emmy season.
Absolutely. I think it definitely deserves to be in the running and the conversation. And I haven't seen any other limited series this year, but absolutely is a must watch.
Yes. We're in agreement there about Chernobyl. Anything else happening with you, Mike?
No, that was all I wanted to talk about was Chernobyl. I know you have some stuff you want to touch on though, Rich.
Oh yeah. This week, man, I've been running around like crazy to promote the heck out of my charity event that's happening this weekend, the 24-hour game show marathon. It is finally happening. It is this weekend. You know, we've done this, you know, this has happened now for the eighth time, and we've been supporting it since the fourth one, I think we started supporting
it. Yeah, we've been a regular sponsor, and so proud to be a sponsor of such a great charity event.
Yes. For those who don't know, this is where me and game show fanatics get together, and we play 24 game shows in 24 hours. We stream the whole thing live on our website, gameshowmarathon.com, and it's a blast. We raise funds for a charity called Child's Play, which gives toys and video game systems to kids that are in hospitals and shelters across the country. And it's a blast. I'm like two opinions on this. I can't believe it's already here, but at the same time, now I can't wait. Like it's here. You know, I'm ready to kick down the door and ready to start setting up and get the broadcast going. So, it's all happening this weekend. We start Saturday at noon, with Wheel of Fortune. I'm hosting it. I'm hosting the first one, so I better be on my A game.
Yeah.
And we go 24 hours straight with 24 game shows all the way until noon on Sunday. So I hope you can tune in at some point. We literally are 24 hours. Literally, whatever time works for you, just tune in to GameShowMarathon.com and see what we're up to. Literally, you can tune in at 2 in the morning and we're there.
Yeah, I had the privilege to attend a few of these. And you guys have such amazing production values, and you guys really put a lot of effort and hard work into putting this thing on, and just continuously blown away by the deep cut game shows you guys pull out. Like, you know, yep. We were talking before the show, like I'm not hugely into game shows. You know, I know like a few of the key staple ones, and I like to tune in from time to time. But you guys are fanatics. You know, the theme music, the hosts, the weird stories behind the scenes, the big contestants that, you know, became famous because of the game shows. So if you're even remotely interested in game shows or just in helping to raise money for a super worthwhile charity, you have to go support these guys.
Actually to piggyback on that, the reason why all of our stuff looks amazing and everything like that is the three other guys that do the game show marathon with me, Corey Annotato, Christian Carrion, and Bob Hegg. They go out, they find the actual fonts, the sound effects, the music. I'm always amazed at what they can throw together.
That was the theme you were playing, backing us.
There's an actual, game show marathon theme.
You guys have an actual theme.
Yes, we do.
Like a unique actual, like, just, it's that sort of attention to detail and those touches you guys put into the production values. That's just amazing. And it just made me think, we've had two of those three guys on the show.
Yeah.
We haven't had Corey on, though.
Yeah, which
what's
is funny.
What's up with that?
Yeah, he's actually the one I'm friends with. He's the one that actually pulled me in on this.
Yeah, what's up with that?
So, yeah, we'll have to get Corey on at some point to talk game shows here on the Crispy Noodle Podcast. So, we'll schedule a time for him at some point here on the Crispy Noodle Podcast. All right, we're running a little bit long now, so we got to jump into the news topics that we have ready for you. And the first batch revolve around sports in the Sports Sampler.
So you're not good at sports. It's a very small part of life.
Sports, 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 sports.
In your face! Ha ha!
Sports coming at you in your face. and we're going to hit a couple topics as fast as we can in 2 minutes or less. You ready, Mike?
I'm ready.
All right, 2 minutes on the clock and go.
All right, well, one of the big stories this week in the 2 minute drill, of course, has to revolve around football. You got to love the football news, even in the offseason. But some Eagles fans might not be too keen on this one. Eagles star safety and defensive leader Malcolm Jenkins has been a no-show for the team's voluntary workouts so far. Yeah, I know. This is kind of troubling. Reports suggest the reason for the absence is the amount of guaranteed money in the remaining 2 years of his contract, which totals a whopping $0. Now, let's back up a little bit. He's going to get paid, but none of it's guaranteed. So if he's injured or they just decide, you know what, it's not working out, goodbye, he gets nothing. So seeing that Jenkins has been an integral part of this Eagles defense and a major player in our recent successes, it's kind of ridiculous that they haven't nailed this down yet. And I think many fans and media personalities agree they got to pay the guy.
Yeah, I mean, he's been the spiritual leader on the defensive side of the ball.
Oh, absolutely. And I think the Eagles as an organization always do right by their veteran leadership. So I hope that they get a deal done. Right now, it's not too big of an issue, but if it lingers much longer, it could be.
Yeah.
And we want to avoid that. We want to keep the focus on the amazing team that we have growing.
Yeah, so Eagles, take care of this right now.
Yeah, get it done. Next up in the two-minute drill, big news coming out of the Philadelphia Phillies. The Phillies traded for Jay Bruce. Phillies sent prospect Jake Schneider. I can't say the name. That one. To Seattle, along with $18.25 million to cover the $21 million left on Bruce's contract to complete the trade. This is a huge move after it was announced outfielder Andrew McCutchen suffered a torn ACL, which is a big injury.
Yeah, he's out for the season.
Yeah, and it already seems like this move is paying dividends for the Phillies. In the first two games with the team, Jay Bruce went 6-for-11, including 2 doubles and 3 home runs. Rich, tell us about this deal.
Yeah, good. Good. Phil's in a spot, and the Phillies are doing better.
So yeah. I know you wanted to expand on this a little bit. Tell us in depth about this deal. What do you give the grade on this deal? I mean, losing McCutchen's a big thing. But
so it's funny because rumors of this spilled actually last Thursday. I remember it happened like the first rumor news story I saw of this literally happened like after we posted the episode last Thursday, and I was like, oh great, major trade.
Don't
news
you
are
love
happening.
It when news breaks the day the episode comes out?
Right. So, at the time, we knew that McCutchen was hurt, but we didn't know the severity of it. So, a lot of people were thinking, oh, Jay Bruce is going to be like a backup player, and is going to be like, wow, okay, Jay Bruce has kind of fallen from grace then, because at one point he was a slugger star. But then, the news came out that McCutchen's injury was worse and turned into a torn ACL, and all of a sudden, this trade now looks like a genius move, because now Bruce has just slid right into his position, and he's hit the ground running. I mean, you can't argue with that. 6-for-11, two doubles and 3 home runs in 2 wins, too.
Yeah, that's
broke a 5-game losing streak out on the West Coast.
That's really impressive when a player can just jump right in and make an immediate impact. Now, that's not to say these numbers are going to hold consistent over the rest of the season, but it's certainly a promising start. And you have to realize the Phillies, we're not a dumb team. You know, sometimes we're not great, but we're not dumb. Like, there's reasons behind these moves.
Yeah, Ruben Amaro's not in charge of the moves anymore, so that's good.
You have to think, professional teams, barring a select few in each league, generally know what they're doing, or have an idea of what they want to accomplish.
They have a reasoning to their madness.
Right.
There's something going on behind the scenes.
They have a plan.
This one was McCutchen was hurt, and you need somebody to be a slugger in that lineup besides Reese and Bryce. So it was good that this move happened. So keep it up, Bruce, and you'll be a Philly favorite. All right. Now,
speaking of falling out of grace, though.
Yeah, speaking of falling out of grace, I can't believe this is a story because Todd Gurley is one of those guys I keep thinking he's a stud running back usually. But unfortunately, that may not be the case. I saw a Twitter post from NFL Media's Ian Rappaport, and it stokes some fear into my fantasy football heart because he says in the Twitter post, quote, the days of Gurley just being the straight-up, every-down bell cow are probably over for him. This is just based on his knee, his age, the position, and the amount of carries he's had already on his career. I need to point something out here. Todd Gurley will be turning 25. It's not like Todd Gurley's an old player. It's not like he's 30, you know?
Yeah.
Todd Gurley is 25. And Ian Rappaport and the fans that are following him are right now pushing the panic button, and they are thinking that this is the end of Todd Gurley's career. What do you think, Mike? Is this... I mean, we all know Todd Gurley had issues towards the end of the Rams' Super Bowl run. They fell short. He wasn't being used in the postseason. It also came out that he had arthritis in his knee. And I don't know what to do with this. Is it really as bad as Rappaport says? Is Todd Gurley no longer the bell cow?
I mean, it's really hard to know. I'll say this, though, that I think... I think where the panic is coming from,
I need to know for my fantasy football draft.
I can tell where your concern really lies. But here's the thing. I think that the issue here is the number of touches that he's getting. I mean, it's already 4 years playing, and he has over 1,000 rushing attempts and, you know, another 180-some receptions. So you're looking at over 1,200 touches in 4 years. That's a lot of workload. And like you said, he has the knees. I think it's a little too early to be pushing the panic button until we see something actually happen, some actual negative consequence. I mean, just looking at the stats right now, I quickly pulled them up. I mean, he's been very consistent and very good for the first 4 years of his career. So I don't see anything to be overly alarmed about right now. But when I'm looking at other...
Well, to play devil's advocate...
Sure.
It must be somewhat significant because the Rams were on their way to a Super Bowl and they weren't using them.
Yeah, and that is the thing that does cause concern, is why was he not used during those playoff games more? But
C.J. Anderson had more rushing attempts and rushing yards than Todd Gurley did in the playoffs.
But you know what? This is really more indicative of something that I have long said. That, and it's not really a secret. I make it out to be like I have some ancient sage wisdom, but it's not. The NFL is moving away from the ground game. It's obvious in the stat sheets that they're moving away from the ground game. And so I've always said, listeners of the podcast will know, that I don't place a lot of importance on drafting running backs high and spending a lot of money in free agency on running backs because of
in the real world.
Yes, in the real world. Because
not fantasy. Mike does not speak on fantasy.
No, not in fantasy. In fantasy, it's topsy-turvy. Take running backs first five picks. It's insane. But in the real world, you don't do that because of this very reason. He's 25, and that seems young. But in running back years, if you're getting hit a lot and you have a lot of carries, that is... You might as well add 2 or 3 years to that. People talk about running backs entering their decline as early as 27. I remember us getting rid of LeSean McCoy when he was turning, I think it was like 27, 28. And the conversation was, well, you know, this is going to be the downslope of his career now. Because that's the way it is. Running backs have such a heavy toll placed on their body, especially these premier backs like a Todd Gurley, like a Le'Veon Bell, like Ezekiel Elliott and Saquon Barkley are going to be in Dallas and New York, respectively. The human body just can't take it. So while I think it's a little preemptive to say already, oh my gosh, his career's over, I do think that they have to start thinking about transitioning away, especially if they know that he has arthritis and he's going to have knee problems, and if they're going to keep trying to use him as this every down workhorse back.
To further back up Mike's sentiment, I've pulled up a list of the top 30 running backs according to Fantasy Football Today, and it has their ages listed right next to it.
Yeah.
Out of the top 30 running backs in the NFL according to Fantasy Football Today, how many do you think are 25 to 30?
Probably no more than a handful.
So how many?
Let's say 6 or 7.
9.
Okay.
And how many are 30 or over?
Probably 0.
0. Everybody else is 25 and under.
I know it's shocking to hear, but this is why you don't draft a running back early. This in the real world. This is why you don't pay Le'Veon Bell what he wanted. because it doesn't make sense, because they're going to get worn down. I mean, you hear the classic stories all the time. Remember Terrell Davis retired at, what was it, like 30? You know, running backs all the time retire young because of the toll it takes on their body. But I'm looking, you know, I just out of curiosity's sake, I went and I looked up Brian Westbrook's numbers. Brian Westbrook, career, had 1,380 career rushing attempts. Todd Gurley already has over 1,000 in 4 years. You know, so you compare the two, and he is far outpacing Brian Westbrook. Brian Westbrook is just somebody random I looked up. I didn't, you know, because there's just the first running back that popped to mind. A more accurate example would be like a LeSean McCoy type. He's amassed over 2,300 rushes, but again, he's played more than twice as long as Todd Gurley, you know?
Yeah.
So I feel like Todd Gurley's really racking up the carries and the touches very quickly.
And
that's a concern for somebody that has arthritis.
Right. And unfortunately, the Rams organization and the Rams fans may not be pushing the panic button, but coming from a fantasy football perspective, I am heavily pushing the panic button.
Really?
Yes.
See, I don't think to push the panic button yet, but you have to hover the hand.
Here's the problem.
Okay.
Todd Gurley in the last three or four fantasy football drafts has gone consistently top five, top three.
Right.
He's usually a go-to pick if you have one of those early top picks.
Right.
Now, you have to at least wait until, I'd say, probably the second round to pick him up.
Wow.
Yeah. This is one of those stories that causes alarm and I think justifies you passing him on the first round.
So
there are so many other options.
Okay.
That you can go with in the first round. That's a surefire thing than taking a risk, an unnecessary risk too, with Todd Gurley.
Okay.
Because if this injury is as serious as Ian Rapoport thinks it is, that's gonna hurt your first pick in the draft.
So
your first pick in the draft has to provide points for you.
So you're saying the 2019 fantasy football draft that everybody's going to have before the season, you're saying this year, Todd Gurley should be no higher than a second rounder. This not next year, but this very year.
I think so.
But has he shown you anything on the field that would make you think he's not going to produce this upcoming season?
My
mind is 2020 and beyond. Like this next season, he'll probably be okay.
But to me, you have to go back on the postseason run where they didn't use him is really concerning to me. And the fact that the Rams have been pretty much quiet about it is also not very good for confidence. And now you have an NFL insider like Ian Rapoport saying that the days of him being a straight up every down bell cow are probably over.
I mean, that is kind of shocking that he would say that.
I don't think you can risk a first round pick on him. There are so many better options you can go with. To me, it's going to be really tough. Just to go over other running backs you could go with. Melvin Gordon, stud for Chargers. He'd probably be a low first round pick. James Conner, the replacement.
Yeah.
He should do well with the Steelers. You could go with Nick. You could go with Joe Mixon because right now the Bengals don't have any other weapons on that team. He's going to get a lot of carries this year. Nick Chubb is a beast. I mean, the problem with him is later on the season.
But
when
are they going to put up the numbers though? Like, yes, they're going to be the only starter, but
you have to go with workload. Who's going to get the rock a lot? And if you're telling
you can get the rock a lot and suck though,
you can. But at least you're amassing yards. But if you're mean to tell me right now that Todd Gurley isn't going to get the same amount of carries that he's used to getting, I don't know. You got to take him a step back. He's got to move back a little bit on your draft board. So I think it's prudent that you pass on him in the first round.
Wow.
Now, if he falls to the second round, okay, I can see that because then your argument, if he actually does come back at full blown force, then you're getting an RB1.
Yeah.
With a second round pick. That's a steal then.
Because I think that he'll still put up the numbers this season. I think this quote is more about the fact that he's at the peak of his career. and that this is more like it's going to be the downslope from here on out. But that being said, he's still at the peak. He might not be able to reach this level again, but for at least the next year, you have to assume, unless we see otherwise in week one, you have to assume that he's going to put up the same numbers.
Unfortunately, the problem is with fantasy football, you don't have until week one. You have until the preseason.
Fantasy football is problematic.
Well, if you ask my opinion, I'm going to go with hold off on the first round.
You know what this really is? Alternative headline for the story. Rich tries to swindle his entire fantasy football league out of picking Todd Gurley in the first round.
Yeah, you know what? Hey, prove me
Rich
wrong.
Rich is
going to
go into his draft and like, suckers, Todd Gurley.
If he falls in the second round, I'll pick him. But if not in the first round. I'm gonna say hold off.
Okay.
Because this is all a whole bunch of red flags, in my opinion. This is somebody you do not want to invest your first pick in. You got to think of it like an investment. The pick you make in the first round has to provide for you.
I guess when you're thinking about like the risk benefit analysis, there are players that offer more reward for less risk.
Correct. So yes,
there's a huge upside, but there's also that lingering what if.
Right. So that's why I would say if you're planning out your fantasy football draft early, right now he has to go down a peg.
I see. If I'm the Rams, I'm running him into the ground to get everything I can out of that contract.
Yeah, how long is that contract? Isn't it a lot?
I don't, but it's
I think
a lot
it's like
of
4 years.
I think it's a lot of guaranteed money, so they're gonna run him into the ground. So they might try to workhorse him to death this next year, just to get something back from the contract.
It's kind of dark.
It's dark, but not for long, right? NFL, not for long.
That's right.
So,
All right. So, I know. So Mike wants to keep talking football. That's okay, because next week we're going to have a whole bunch of non-football news with golf and, the Stanley Cup and the NBA finals ending. So
got to get all the football talk in this week. And what better chance than now to go over the Eagles 2019 schedule? We figured it's a little bit of a light week in terms of news. So this will be the perfect opportunity to go over, the schedule that was released a few weeks ago and talk about predicting wins and losses and just go over some of the interesting tidbits we noticed in the schedule. So, Rich, one of the things that I noticed right off the bat is we have 5 primetime games. Looks like the NFL is anticipating the Eagles to be back to their stellar performing antics of 2017.
Yeah, take that, rest of the league.
Yeah, take that, rest of the league. But, I always like watching the Eagles in primetime. It's nice to know that the league respects the fact that the Eagles are a competent team, that they are a big pull team that is capable of a lot of action worthy of prime time. So it'll be exciting to see them get the national spotlight several times.
There's going to be a lot of interesting matchups for the divisions. We're facing off against the NFC North and the AFC East.
Yes.
Which is going to be interesting.
High-powered divisions, I think.
And there's going to be a couple of interesting playoff rematches, one against the Patriots, one against the Bears.
Yep.
I think they're within like 3 weeks of each other, too.
They're split by a bye week. Yep. So that's going to be – and this is what I want to talk about, is that stretch right there is going to be super tough because we have – starting in week 6 – things are going to get a little hairy because we're going to go on the road, Vikings, Cowboys, Bills. Bills not so much, but Vikings and Cowboys both on the road back-to-back.
Yeah.
And then come back home, have to rematch against the Bears, get a little time off, but then the Patriots come into home, and then the Seahawks come into home. I mean, that's just a crazy stretch right there.
Yeah, that could make or break the season.
It's going to be tough, but I think that bye week there, week 10, is going to help us out a lot. I love the bye week in that position.
Yeah. How about we do rapid fire?
All right,
and try and amass what we got here. I've got my interactive chart up.
Oh.
So we can follow along here. So week 1, Washington at Philly.
That's a win for us.
Yeah, I think so too. Week 2, Sunday night game, Eagles at Falcons.
I don't like the Falcons. We've beat them several times now, and everybody has always picked us to lose the game. I think we'll be all right.
I think so, too.
The Falcons are way overrated.
It should be a good offensive contest. These are two high-powered offenses, meaning so.
This is the strongest our defense will be in either of the times that we matched up against them the past 2 years. Because hypothetically, right. We'll be at full strength. Knock on wood.
Right. So we'll agree on that one. Then Detroit at Philly. I'm going to go with Philly, I think.
Yeah, I think that's easily Philly.
Then a Thursday night game right off of that. Eagles at Lambeau against the Packers.
We suck against the Packers.
I don't like the fact it's also away and it's a short week.
It is a short week. It's away. We, for whatever reason, struggle against the Packers, even though people are well aware of my dismay towards them. Yeah, I'm unfortunately going to go Packers here. First loss, I think.
Me too. The Jets come to town against the Eagles.
That's a win.
I think so as well. Then I think this is your worry part here.
Yeah.
This is the three-game road trip. So the first one is at Vikings.
Oh, this is a tough one. I really do believe, though, that the Eagles have stayed at least as talented as they were when we faced them in the NFC Championship game in 2017. I think the Vikings got a little bit worse, mostly because of Kirk Cousins.
Well, this is what I'm going to go with.
Okay.
The Eagles are just going to piss you off because
of course they are.
This is going to be a pride game. They're going to know it, and they're going to prove Mike wrong. And they're going to have Kirk Cousins win at home.
They're going to tell Kirk Cousins, like, yo, this one dude in the Philadelphia area hates you a lot. And he's like,
you.
Well, this is my time to actually earn my $90 million right. One time a year where this I'm good.
He's gonna light up 500 passing yards on the Eagles.
Probably.
So I'm gonna actually pencil this as a loss. I think the Eagles are going to lose this one on the road against the Vikings. Then Sunday night game, Eagles at Cowboys.
Now, this is going to be the controversial pick. I think they're going to drop this one.
Me too. I think they're going
to... I just feel like...
It's tough to go into Jerry World and win.
Jerry World and, you know, coming off of a road game against the Vikings, a really tough team to play, then you got to go right back on the road to a division rival. And not only that, but the last few times that we faced the Cowboys, it hasn't necessarily been, like, the best of the circumstances for the Cowboys. But I feel like, barring anything crazy happening, they're probably going to be at a pretty good strength at that point with Ezekiel Elliott, Amari Cooper, yeah. First matchup against
Amari
the division
Cooper,
rival is always tough, too.
I said this last year. Amari Cooper was literally brought in just to screw around with the Eagles because that just causes so many problems against the Eagles' defense.
Yeah. And the first game against a division opponent is usually the toughest. So that's going to be a loss, I think.
So this is interesting because right now the Eagles are at 4-3, which is
really,
yeah.
Wait, by whose record? Mine or yours? By yours, you put the Vikings in as a loss.
Okay. I thought
I have them at 5-2.
Oh, all right. Well, I'm going to say the universe is going to spit on you.
Okay.
Because
you know what? That's probably what's going to happen.
The universe hates you.
Universe really does hate
and
me.
And we'll have Kirk Cousins throw over 500 yards.
Absolutely.
So I'm going with that.
The spit.
So if it does happen, that means at this point the Eagles are 4-3, and
God,
that would be interesting. There would be some talk that are the Eagles as good as we thought they were. But then they get a matchup at Buffalo. I think that kind of rights the ship.
Yeah, that's a win. That's an easy win.
And then at home, welcome back home, then they face the Bears. Do you think the Bears will try and make this a grudge match and pull one out?
They will try. It will be very difficult in Philly.
Right,
because as much as they're going to want to come in and try, our fans are going to want to come in and double doink them to death. I can just imagine the signs and the chants, and it's just going to be really, really tough. It's starting to get colder, not that it matters for the Bears, but our fans are going to be riled up. I think that's a win. I really do. Bears got that good defense, but they still haven't shown what they can do. They're nothing on offense.
Yeah, that offense stalls way too fast.
Yeah, so as long as we keep it in check, that's a win.
Okay, so then we got the bye week, and then Patriots come to town.
Well, wait, what's our record going in the bye week?
6-3.
Okay, that's respectable.
But then the Patriots come to town.
Yeah.
It's Bill Belichick. I can't go against Bill Belichick. He's the devil, Palpatine, and Voldemort all rolled into one.
I think we can do it.
Really?
I think so. I think that... The Patriots aren't going to, you know, sleep on us. That's not the issue. I think that Carson Wentz...
We're both on a bye week, too, coming out of this.
And I think you give Doug Peterson and Carson Wentz enough time to study up. people always say Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, but I think Carson Wentz and Doug Peterson are both students of the game as well. Last year, we were hampered a lot by not having our full arsenal at times. We had no run game. Carson Wentz was still injured. Assuming that we have a run game with Jordan Howard, assuming that we have Carson Wentz at full strength, assuming that DeSean Jackson is going to be causing chaos for opposing defenses, I think there's a good shot of winning this game because I think the Eagles will be extra motivated. The Eagles will be rested coming off a bye week, and the Patriots may or may not have Rob Gronkowski, which could be
that story.
You know, a big, big issue for them. Also, Tom Brady's got to slow down at some point, right? He's got to slow down.
I've said that like the last 2 years, and he's won Super Bowls.
Yeah, but you know what? It reminds me of the year that we were like 6-10, and one of the people that we beat was the Patriots, and everybody counted us out. We have something with the Patriots. We can play them. As weird as it sounds, we can play them, and at home, I think we'll be able to handle them. I'm going out on a limb. Now, this next one, the Seahawks.
So what? Do you really want me to mark that? I think that's kind of a homer pick.
All right, fine. Mark it as a loss.
I'm going to mark it as a loss.
It's still a win in my book. That's going to be my underdog win of this season.
Okay.
But this next one, this is also a controversial pick. I think we're going to drop this one to the Seahawks because we cannot beat Russell Wilson if our lives depended on it.
Yeah.
If they were like, you can have all 11 players against just Russell Wilson, we would still lose. We would still lose. It pisses me off. They're not that great of a team anymore. And we lose anyway. When's the last time we beat the Seahawks? I can't even remember.
It's been a while. Though,
it's usually in Seattle, though.
Right. I think you got to change this one because this is at home. Seattle is a poor road team.
We can't stop Russell Wilson. We can't stop that little midget. We can't.
Wow.
He's so small and so fast.
You really hate Russell Wilson.
I hate Russell Wilson
this.
And Kirk Cousins.
Wow.
And Ben Roethlisberger, the rapist.
We need to make like a hit list for you of quarterbacks.
It's
you don't
every
like.
Quarterback besides Carson Wentz. I don't know if you've realized that, Rich.
All right. I'm going to.
What do you say?
I think the Eagles can handle that at home. If that was at Seattle, I could definitely see your argument. But
okay.
Mark it as a win. How about that?
Since we've been going with your picks the whole time, we'll continue with it.
Okay.
Rich is like just completely discounting me.
Then week 13, Eagles at Miami.
That's a win.
I think that's a win. See, this is where I think it gets easier. I think this is the stretch.
The end of the schedule is actually not bad.
Right. This is where I think they can gain some momentum and really punch their ticket into the playoffs.
I'll make it easy for you. The last four are wins. Giants, Redskins, Cowboys, Giants. The Giants are the Giants.
Yep.
Duke Johnson, or you kidding, whatever his name is, get real. The Redskins are the Redskins. Get real. The Cowboys, this is a rematch from, you know, earlier in the season. I think we may have be able to iron out any of the kinks from the first matchup. I think we can pull this one off.
Yeah, I agree as well. The last four division matchups are all winnable. The two New York Giants ones should be cupcake matches. They should both be easy wins.
No Odell Beckham. Stack
right.
the box.
Exactly.
Eli's a statue. Get after him.
So if you go by, I'm going to agree with you, Mike, the last four wins at versus Giants, at Redskins, versus Cowboys, at New York, I think they're all wins. Those last four, I think that's the momentum push that the Eagles go to punch their ticket in the playoffs.
So we're in agreement. We're going to finish the season minimum on a five win streak.
Yes, unless something goes horribly wrong. Yeah, I think that's reasonable.
Okay.
Because none of those teams strike fear in my hearts, in my opinion.
We just have to get past the Patriots and Seahawks matchup, and then the rest should be easy sailing.
So I'm going with... I'm going with like 11-5, 12-4.
I mean, that makes sense. The sketchy matchups for me are Packers, Vikings, one Cowboys game, Patriots and Seahawks. And I think out of those five, they really only lose four of them.
So there you go. That's our official predictions as of the off season. Things may change as we get closer to training camp.
Things will definitely change.
Oh, yeah. And we find out more about our team as they get into form, getting ready for the upcoming NFL season. But there you go. Mike, you had your heyday with all the football news.
I feel great.
You better enjoy it because next week is all non-football. I can already guarantee it.
I've built up a high tolerance with all this football that we talked about.
All right, good. But as for this episode, don't go anywhere because we've got the entertainment entree and then the non-fortune cookie odd news still to come. We'll be right back.
The Crispy Noodle, always crunchy.
I'm Nikolai Volkov. I want you to keep listening to Crispy Noodle. Hey, that is order.
Hey, this is Tony Gaga. You got a podcast? You got to go to the podcast I go to. I'll get you this podcast for $2. That's the Crispy Noodle Podcast for $2.
Yeah, we're back here on the Crispy Noodle Podcast. Mike, I hope you lived up your football dreams, because I'm telling you, next week in the sports sampler, it's going to be glorious with golf, the NBA Finals, Stanley Cup Finals as well. Hopefully, they should all be coming to an end. And yeah, it'll be interesting to cover all that next week. So you better.
I'll just have football on replay in my head.
Just on replay. All right. Well, we'll move from the sports realm, and it's now time to go into the entertainment world in the entertainment entree.
And now, the latest in movies.
The Simpson guy writes to movies. Dear Die Hard, you rock, especially when that guy was on the roof.
Music.
I know what that is. That's music.
Video games.
I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite store on the Citadel.
Celebrities.
You really know Warren Beatty?
Yes, I do. I took a leak next to him once at the Golden Globes.
And more.
You were the all-singing and all-dancing crap of the world.
This is the Entertainment Entree.
Pitch, you know, you're why the fuck here?
there you go. I have to play this clip. So this week I've been doing kind of a semi-media tour for the game show marathon.
Right.
So I've been going on a lot of podcasts and shows, trying to drum up as much interest as I can. And one of the shows I went on to, new for me this year, was the Tri Jam podcast out in Jersey. And they're a great group of guys. And I know Kyle, the host of the show, through Beasley and all that stuff. So, you know, we were kind of casual, and I think he wasn't ready for, you know, the transition to actually ask me the first question, and that was all he could muster up.
Pitch, you know, you're why the fuck here?
So, there you go. If you ever want to get a really good first question out to your... to the person you're interviewing, there you go.
I mean, just,
why are you here?
It's just straight to the point.
Yeah,
you know,
you're plugging something, aren't you?
That's right. Yeah, you don't got to fuss around with, you know, introductions and being cute with transitions. Just get straight to the point.
Yeah,
you're here
come
to
on.
Plug something. Just say it.
Yeah, you know? We know you're here for a reason.
Pitch, you know, you're why the fuck here?
So I think I might have to make that a sound clip. Just
yes.
I also love just the beginning. It's like an old man at a Jewish deli or something.
An old man at a Jewish deli.
Why is there so much meat?
That is a strangely accurate summation
yes.
of that sound. Wow.
That's what impressive. I
think, yeah. Rye bread.
Pitch, you know, you're why the fuck here? Why it was 50 cents cheaper yesterday. Why is there so much meat on it?
You know?
Yeah, it's a shame that people can't see all the hand motions that go along with that. It's like Rich is directing airplane traffic or something.
It is. You got to be really adamant, you know. It's all part of that, like, you know, Italian, Jewish. We activate a lot
with our
hands.
It's all that Southern, Eastern, European with talking with the hands.
Yeah.
You know?
It's all one
Western
happy family
and
there.
Northern Europe is all very different. But Southern and Eastern European, they're very animated.
Different.
There's damn Western and Northern Europeans.
They keep their hands to their sides. There's poor people.
They don't move. They don't emote. They don't do anything.
The Irish don't even move their hands while they're dancing. What's up with that?
Yeah, what is up with that?
Come on.
Come on, you weird non-hand moving people.
It is kind of true. You could.
It is. They do the river dance. They just move their legs. It's bizarre.
You could draw a line between Ireland and, like, Italy.
Okay.
And there would be like an actual what would you call it?
Spectrum?
Yeah, spectrum, thank you. A spectrum of how
so
much they use
leg,
their hands
leg
versus
moving
how much
hand
they don't.
Moving.
Yes.
Okay. And all the countries in between.
Yeah. We don't move our legs.
No. That is abundantly clear.
Italians don't move unless we're trying to get, you know, our next cup of coffee or something.
Right, or the next plate of spaghetti or, you know, whatever.
Right, that's it. Uh-uh.
Yeah.
But these
We're a very lounging type of people.
But these guys up in Ireland, man, they're running all around.
Now, you're also part German, though, Rich. So what do the Germans move?
They move just very intensely.
Okay. Just everything is just accelerated and exaggerated.
They did the goose steps.
That is... I think we have the basis of a really sound new, like, geocultural theory.
Here. Yeah. If you draw... I think it works. If you draw a line from Italy to Ireland, I think you have a good spectrum.
So Germany falls more on the Ireland side of the spectrum because of the goose stepping thing.
Right. But they still move their hands with the
okay.
Solid...
Okay, but how do you...
I'm sorry, this is really bad. This is all stereotyping.
That is true, though. That is true. They got both all their limbs going. So how do you account for, though, like the Russian gulag dance where they just kick their legs out? Because that's even east of Italy.
Mm.
And then they go back to using legs. So is it more of a bell-shaped curve?
Ooh, that's good. Well, yeah, maybe it's a bell-shaped curve across Europe.
Yeah.
And it ends up... back in Ireland.
It's legs, and then it goes to arms, and then back to legs.
Yeah, something like that. I think we got something there.
I'm really... My mind is just a whirl with transient nodes of thought right now.
Yeah. We'll do more significant research on this, but I think I got something there.
Look out for our academic article on the crispynoodle.com. That's not happening.
No.
Anyway.
But there you go. I just wanted to give a shout-out to the TriJam podcast for having me on, and Kyle, what a heck of a question you asked me to start off the interview. I never had that one before.
So, Pitch, you know, you're why the fuck here?
All right, so it's time to get into entertainment news, and there's something I want to talk about. It's actually appropriate since the game show marathon is this weekend. Huge game show news. The champion, the one they're calling Jeopardy James, James Holzhauer, lost on Monday night. And this ended a historic run on the show. He was just essentially a force to be reckoned with. I mean, he essentially was just not only was he aggressive with his bets and how he played the game, he was just pure smart. 97% of the questions he buzzed in, he answered correctly.
That's insane.
Yeah.
That's near perfect.
Right. And, I'll tell you what, you can have all the strategy you want, but if some guy's answering with that amount of accuracy, it's really going to be tough to defeat him.
Yeah, it's not just the fact that he outplayed people. I mean, he had to know what he was doing, too.
Right.
You know, he had to know the answers. You can't just have a good strategy and hope for the best.
Yeah, the risks don't pay off if you don't know the answer.
Right, exactly.
So it was really impressive to see him go on this run. He finished his final total at $2,464,216.
Wow.
Which is a lot, and I'm sure he'll be happy with that take-home pay. But unfortunately, he falls just around $56,000 short of Ken Jennings' regular season earnings record.
Oh.
So
that would have been like another game for him because he was accumulating this money at a really fast pace.
Right. He like, probably would have done it if he won Monday night.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately.
I have to admit, though, I kind of like the fact that Ken Jennings' record still stands because it was like.
That shows you how impressive it is.
Exactly. And it's the biggest thing that ever happened in Jeopardy.
Yeah.
You know?
Although, I think it's going to be interesting when James Holzhauer comes back for the Tournament of Champions. Because I think he has a chance to add to his all-time Jeopardy winnings if he wins that. So it was it was great to watch. I mean, he definitely changed the way you look at the board and how you can play the board and use it to your advantage.
Well, his whole thing was taking the more winning, the higher value. I couldn't think of the word. The higher value.
And you want to do an academic paper?
Yeah. God. But yeah, he took the higher value tiles first. I mean, anybody can do that. Why don't more people do it?
Yeah, I mean, you can.
I've always thought it was weird that people stand by the old custom of 200, 400, 600. Why don't they just go straight for the jugular?
Yeah.
You know, go straight to the bottom.
That's what James did, and it paid off for him. So it was great to see it in action. It lasted over the last 2 months. I'm sure he'll be happy to go back home with his family with $2 million in the bank.
Yeah, it's sad they didn't break the record, but I'm sure he's plenty happy.
Yeah. Also, we got to say shout out to the winner, Emma Boettcher. I'm probably butchering her name. But wow, she played the exact same strategy that James did and took him down with his own formula, and she played a perfect game. I think
wow.
She only missed one or two answers.
So she'll go on and she'll have the next streak.
Well, I mean, she's actually still alive on the show.
Well, there you go.
So she might be the next long reigning champion.
That's cool.
So
game shows need something like that every once in a while to keep people interested.
Yep. So James, we'll see you later on in the Tournament of Champions edition of Jeopardy. All right. So with that in mind, let's go over the next part of the show where Mike lets you know what's coming up this weekend with movies, TV, video games, and stuff like that in Mike's This Week in Entertainment.
Yay!
All right. Yay. Get everyone's excited for it.
Yay!
Yes. Well, you will be doubly excited. It's perfect timing that you just talked about Jeopardy James and that you're going to be on the 24-hour game show marathon this upcoming weekend because all the game shows ever are coming to ABC this week. It's just very strange timing. Starting Sunday, you have the $100,000 Pyramid, Celebrity Family Feud, and To Tell the Truth. On Tuesday, you have a revival of Press Your Luck.
Yes!
On Wednesday, you have a revival of Card Sharks.
Yes!
And I actually missed one in the rundown. Also on Wednesday, you have Match Game.
Yes!
So what is that? That's, I believe, six game shows.
All
premiering
the game shows.
In the span of a week. Rich, how excited are you for all this? Are you just going to be living on ABC?
So Pyramid, you know, is great. Family Feud is great. Tell the Truth is great. But I am excited for Pressure Luck and Card Sharks. These are two of my favorite game shows coming back. And
it's basically just different versions of gambling.
I mean, in a way, it is. You got the cards for Card Sharks, and Pressure Luck is basically an elaborate, you know, roulette wheel. Just that you control that when it stops.
It's an elaborate roulette wheel. You're absolutely right.
But you know, Pressure Luck is definitely one that hits home. I grew up on Pressure Luck.
No whammy. I mean, that's fun.
My mom will attest. I drew the board. I drew up my own like personal boards, and I tried to make the. You know, my own layout of where I would put the money amounts and the whammies and everything. So I can't believe it's coming back to television. Pressure Luck, I can't wait for that. And Card Sharks is just a simple show that works well with so many audiences. I can't wait to see that in action as well.
Yeah, it's a simple concept that anybody can get behind. It's got Joel McHale hosting the revival. So that should be pretty interesting.
I think he should have some interesting reactions to the polls that they take in that show. So
yeah, absolutely. So there you go. Tune into ABC to get all your game show fix. That is, of course, starting after the 24-hour game show marathon on Saturday.
Well, get so, ready. You can get that's ready.
Right. It's basically you start on Saturday and you just keep watching game shows the entire week.
Yeah.
So there you go.
You start with our 24-hour game show marathon and then you move to ABC.
There you go. Everybody, you got your game plan. Go team. Next up in movies, speaking about teamwork, you're going to be following this superhero team in Dark Phoenix coming out this week. The latest X-Men movie. It's Fox's last X-Men movie in the series before everything transitions over to Disney. The film follows Jean Grey in her descent to unlocking her powerful, dangerous, and corruptive psychic abilities, turning her into the Dark Phoenix. The X-Men have to decide if the life of one of their own is more valuable than the lives of the world. That's right. I mean, geez, it's all or nothing with these movies. So dark and dire. But the movie, of course, retreads the same story of the third X-Men movie, but the critics are not really enjoying it. The X-Men franchise is kind of messed up right now, so maybe it's a good thing that it's stopping where it is. Fans will want to check this final one out from the Fox X-Men franchise before Disney finally takes over and actually makes it good. In video games, a new month equals new free games for PlayStation Plus and Xbox Live Gold subscribers. The big one this month that I have to tell everyone about is Sonic Mania. It is a new 2D Sonic game that combines reimagined and updated versions of classic levels from the original Sonic trilogy from the Sega Genesis, alongside brand new levels, obstacles, enemies, and multi-stage boss fights. It's the 2D Sonic sequel fans have been waiting for since the Genesis era. I'm very excited that this game is free and people will finally get to try it out. I played it back when it first came out. It is fantastic. It looks and sounds and feels exactly like the original Sonic the Hedgehog games, which is so impressive. They've been chasing this high since the Sega Genesis era, and this game does such a stellar job of matching it beat for beat across every metric all along the way. Go check it out. That's Sonic Mania, the free game for PlayStation Plus subscribers for this month. And that's what we're looking forward to this week in entertainment.
All right, Mike, thank you for that segment this week in entertainment. So all game shows aside and all sports aside, there's even another big event that's happening in the immediate future.
That's right.
In the world of video games, and that is the annual E3 Expo. This is kind of like the Super Bowl of upcoming video game announcements and stuff like that. So, Mike, what do you want to preview before this actually happens?
Yeah, so E3 is the biggest event in video games. This year is no different. It is going to be packed with tons of announcements. We're in one of those periods in this generation where this generation is starting to slow down, so everybody is excited for one big thing this E3, and that is the potential reveal of new gaming hardware. One company that we know won't be making announcements is Sony, because they've already said they're not showing up to the big conference. This is the first time they're not attending since the PlayStation 1, so it's a big shift away from what they normally do. They did recently, it's very strange, they're not going to be at E3, but they've been having a lot of press releases and interviews and announcements. I guess they're trying to fill that void before E3 to keep the conversation on the PlayStation. But they recently talked about single-player games with all the new multiplayer games coming out. They felt it was necessary to reaffirm that they are dedicated to single-player narrative games, saying, quote, "It's certainly not a genre of gaming we'll ever walk away from." That's really, I think, a positive sign.
I think that's good news, in my opinion.
Yeah, that I love to hear that stuff. But what do you think Sony's absence, or how do you think it's going to affect their standing with gamers? Do you think they're doing enough before E3 to make up for their absence at the show?
I think they're doing what they can. I get their reasoning behind it because they still want people to be invested in the PlayStation 4.
Right.
They don't want to come out showing the PlayStation 5 yet.
Uh-uh. They don't need to.
And they don't need to either. Yeah.
I mean, you have Death Stranding coming out this fall. You have The Last of Us coming out probably in the spring, The Last of Us 2. And then Ghost of Tsushima. So they have, fans already know, we still have three huge blockbuster games coming out. There's no reason to jump ship yet.
Right. So I think they're just kind of biding their time.
Okay. But here's the big issue, is that while they're biding their time, Microsoft is going to come in here like gangbusters, and they are expected to make some huge reveals. A lot of people think that they could be announcing new consoles at this E3. And alongside those new consoles, after announcing the acquisition of a whole bunch of developers last year, people are hoping that they're going to show new games from these new studios on these new consoles. Rich, how big of a moment is this for Microsoft?
Well, actually, I would say the...
Or is this like sort of a nervous moment for them?
Yeah, I would say the pressure is actually on Microsoft right now, because the Xbox One has not lived up to the expectations compared to the PlayStation 4.
Yeah.
The PlayStation 4 has owned this era.
To put it into perspective for you, Microsoft stopped announcing sales numbers for their console.
Yeah.
Because PlayStation was outselling them so heavily. I mean, there's no numbers right now, but I would wager that PlayStation 4 has probably broken 100 million units. And Xbox stopped announcing numbers like 2 or 3 years ago.
So really, Microsoft has to make some splashes to catch up on ground with the PlayStation 4.
So what do you think that splash could be? Do you think a new console is enough, or do you think that they need to have games from those new companies to show? Or is it something completely different, surprise us all with like a bigger focus on streaming? Because everybody knows that they've really been focusing on Project X Cloud and their Game Pass thing and Xbox Live. They really seem to be pushing this idea of game streaming as a service. And of course, you know, with Google's announcement of Stadia, there's even more awareness on this aspect of gaming.
Yeah. They could make an announcement in that. I'm interested to see how this stacks up with Google, because I want to see... I think that the really big headline is Google Stadia. I want to see what exactly their plan looks like.
This is huge. I'm glad you brought that up. Google Stadia is going to be at E3. This is a big departure, or actually an addition. It's the first time that we've had a major console debut at E3 in...
An original,
yes.
Yeah.
There have been console reveals, but like I'm thinking back, like the first time a big player stepped into the market since probably Microsoft did with the original Xbox.
Right.
I mean, Google showing up with their gaming platform, even if it's not a physical platform, is huge. And you can see the effect it's having already on these companies. Microsoft focusing more on game streaming. Sony, I actually just read an article literally before we started the segment about how Sony admitted that they entered that deal with Microsoft to use their server network to stream games because of Google entering the market for video games. They actually openly admitted, yeah, we signed that agreement with Microsoft because Google entered the market space. I mean, think about the repercussions of it. They're making companies sign agreements with each other because they're afraid of what Google can accomplish.
Well, that's fair. I mean, Google is a huge, you know, behemoth. They've got a lot of resources they can throw into this if they want to, you know, step into the video game showdown.
It's really exciting because it really does change the dynamic. You know, it's going to push these companies. It's going to give us another avenue through which we can experience and interact with games. I think there can only be good that comes from this. I know there's a lot of naysayers and doubters about, you know, network reliability and streaming games. I mean, it's a lot of data. You have lag to contend with. But it might not be perfect, but for certain genres, it will work. You know, you're not going to be playing twitchy first-person shooters. But for slower puzzle games or RPGs, it might be serviceable enough that you could play it on the go, you know?
Yeah.
And it's exciting to think of where this could lead. And I'm really what I want out of this is just greedy on my part and selfish on my part, is I hope that it pushes Microsoft more towards a streaming platform model, because maybe they'll be convinced to open up the platform to, you know, other consoles and other devices. Basically, what I want is Microsoft to put their Game Pass library onto the PlayStation or Switch. that would mean I could get everything in one place. I'm just being a greedy, I want all the consoles type gamer without spending the money on all the consoles.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm a little biased there. But it is very exciting. Google, though, has a lot of work that they need to do. They need to show people the pricing model. They need to come up with release info. They need to showcase new games. That's what people care about. They can come out and they can have the best little tech demos, but it's not going to matter unless they say, this is what it's going to cost and this is how it's going to work. You know, because they say they want to launch later this year in the fall. We need to know what it's going
to
cost.
People need to know how to budget this.
Right, exactly. I mean, that's a big point for gamers. Remember when the PlayStation 3 revealed at $600?
Yeah.
You know? And remember when the PlayStation 4 revealed at $400?
Ding!
People, it's a big issue because it's an expensive hobby. So if Google whiffs on the pricing or the packages that they offer, it could really damage Google Stadia's chances.
Yeah, so I think that Google Stadia will be the one that everybody has their eyes on, because I think that sets the tone for the competition for the rest of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. Another big thing with E3 that everybody's looking forward to is the reveal of Crystal Dynamics' Avengers action RPG. This has been rumored for a while, way back when Marvel decided to stop licensing out. Let me rephrase. Marvel had previously given companies licenses to their games, and they were very hands-off, and they've since taken a more hands-on approach, as evidenced by Insomniac's Spider-Man game, which was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
They have an exclusive Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3 coming out on the Nintendo Switch later this summer. So Marvel has really been focusing on partnering with key developers to make really good games and not just licensing out properties willy-nilly. So the next stage of this is they've partnered with Crystal Dynamics to make a big action RPG featuring the Avengers. And the E3 press release that came out already has people really excited. It says, quote, that the game focuses on cinematic storytelling with continuous single-player and cooperative gameplay. Assemble teams up to 4 players, master extraordinary abilities, customize your heroes to fit your playstyle, and combine powers to defend an ever-expanding world under constant threat. That sounds like a lot of fun, and there's a lot of key things in there that I'm excited about. Cinematic storytelling and continuous single-player and cooperative gameplay. It sounds to me like they're really going to focus on creating a living, breathing world that you can play in for a long time.
So is it going to be like a sandbox kind of a game, like a Grand Theft Auto?
It sort of sounds like that, right? Continuous single player and cooperative gameplay. It sounds like it would have to be some sort of open world or semi-open world. I don't know what else it could be, but the only thing that I worry about with an open world is how do you do open world with a team of superheroes? You know, like when you can fly everywhere, if you can fly everywhere, it's just going to have a lot of unique gameplay challenges that they would have to solve,
mm-hmm.
You know,
because
if you could just Iron Man everywhere, you know, it sort of takes the challenge out of a lot of stuff. So they have to solve that. I'm really excited for this. I mean, it's like the perfect game, isn't it? Playing as a team of Marvel superheroes with your friends in a massive 3D open world. I mean, isn't that like every superhero and video game fan's dream right there?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like that'd be a great idea, but it is one of those things I would need to see.
You're not sold completely yet.
Yeah.
I mean, neither am I, because they haven't shown anything.
Right. I need to see this actually working and what the actual gameplay looks like. Because, yeah, it does seem like how are you going to balance this in terms of level progression and stuff
right.
like that, you know?
My biggest fear is that they force you to play certain Avengers to fix some of that. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want them to be like, this is the Hawkeye level. Nothing against Hawkeye, but when you got Thor and Iron Man on your team, you know, you don't really want to be Hawkeye, right?
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that really was awesome was Endgame when he turned into like a ninja.
I mean, that would
that
be
that was pretty cool.
That would be cool, but this would probably piss you off. It'd probably have to be a stealth type. Yeah, see? So, yeah, so not even you would like the Hawkeye levels, because, like, here's the Hawkeye level, be stealthy and ninja-like.
No!
Yeah. See, you would be, your favorite character would probably be the Hulk. Just run around, smash everything, you're just like, what's the objective? Break things? Cool.
Yeah.
Got that.
Tap B, or tap square as many times as you can. Yeah. I'm in.
Rich is like, well, I destroyed the whole city. What's the objective now?
You were supposed to save the children!
It's like, oh, whoops. Whoops. Does it count if there's no more children?
Right. Technically,
that's right.
There's no children to save.
That's right. The children aren't in danger if there's no children left. That got dark.
Yes.
But, yeah, so everybody's really excited to break the world and destroy all the kids in the Avengers action RPG. It's probably not going to come out for a while, but everybody's very excited to see some news on it. One superhero game, though, that people are not going to get any news on, and this is kind of disappointing and a little worrying, is Rocksteady's next game. Rocksteady, of course, is the developer of the famed Batman Arkham series. They will not be attending E3 again. This means that the last game that they released was the two-hour Batman VR game in 2016. The last major game they released was the Batman Arkham Knight game in 2015. Rich, should we be worried that they have now missed multiple E3s in a row and they have nothing to show the past 3 or 4 years? It seems odd that they're not even willing to tease what their next game is. They've said what their game isn't. They said it's not a Superman game. Okay, fantastic. But, like, Death Stranding was announced and will be releasing in the same amount of time that Rocksteady's done nothing.
Yeah, I mean, that is a little bit for concern. But, I mean, maybe they got something up their sleeve for the future. Maybe they're planning a game for PlayStation 5 when that comes out.
I was just going to say, is this next gen? And the reason they can't show anything is because nothing's been announced yet.
I would say that's probably the logical step. But it is a little bit worrisome that they haven't made any sort of comment.
Yeah, because, I mean, you think about modern game dev cycles, right? It usually takes about 5 to 6 years to get a game from scratch to release. And it's already been 4 years. Usually they announce a game a year or two away from release. So how far away from release are they if they're not saying anything? You know, it's just, I guess this is part of me just being a selfish gamer again. I just want something from Rocksteady.
Yeah.
It's been too long.
They've made great games in the past, so we want a new one from them. But at the same time, if it's something that's supposed to come out for the PlayStation 5, they're not gonna say anything about it until Sony's ready to launch the PlayStation 5, which that won't be until, what, 2020 at the earliest?
Probably fall 2020. Yeah. So maybe E3 next year, probably our best bet, but it's going to be a long wait till then. I tell you, man, it's going to be tough. But yeah, so E3 is a very exciting time for video gamers. Lots of big news. Of course, this is all just rumors and speculation right now. We'll have the full breakdown for you guys next week after all the announcements have been made. I'm really excited for this E3. I think it's going to be a great opportunity to see where the future of games is going to go. It'll be very interesting to see what Microsoft and Xbox and Google come out with.
Yeah.
Because that could very well dictate what Sony does. I think Sony's actually in an enviable position, though. Because they wait for all the messaging from the other guys. Then they come out and they say, hey, here's our answer.
Right.
You know?
So I can't wait to see what Google does. To me, that's the spotlight. I want to see how Google is going to implement Stadia and see how their streaming service is going to work. So there you go. E3 preview coming your way right there. And we'll check in next week to see how well all of those providers do at the E3 Expo. But for now, that will wrap up the entertainment entree. But we got one more part of the show still left, the non-fortune cookie odd news. And I've got some weird stories that you need to hear. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back here on the Crispy Noodle Podcast.
Hey, what do you hear? What do you say? This is Vic DiBattista, and you are listening to the Crispy Noodle Podcast.
Hi, I'm game show host Todd Newton from Whammy, Family Game Night, Hollywood Showdown, and more. And I don't know if you've heard about the 24-hour game show marathon. It's happening June 8th out of the great city of Philadelphia. And this is where four super fans come together to recreate 24 of their favorite game shows. It's really cool. But they're not just doing it to have a good time. They're doing it to raise some money for a great cause, Child's Play. Really helps out children and families that could use a little assistance. If you'd like to donate, please go to GameShowMarathon.com. GameShowMarathon.com. And it is there where you can watch all of the festivities again on June 8th from Philadelphia. We appreciate your support and long live game shows, baby. Game Show Marathon.
Yeah, we're back here on the Crispy Noodle Podcast. We are done the sports sampler and the entertainment entree. And that leaves us with one last part of the show left. You ready for what it is, Mike?
I'm ready. It's time for the tasty dessert at the end of this meal for your mind. It's time for my favorite segment, the Wacky the Wild, the always entertaining non-fortune cookie odd news.
We've been talking about cool and its ramifications and how it applies to the hip scene. But maybe you could give us some examples now of the opposite of cool, uncool. Just exactly what is uncool?
My nipples look like milk duds.
Holy shnikes.
It's time for the non-fortune cookie odd news.
It's not of this world. I don't know exactly what it is or what it's doing, but this is not human intelligence, okay? It's not human intelligence we're facing!
How you doing? See? I'm doing great.
Manda de bastata. I don't make this stuff up.
I'll take a pound of nuts.
That's a lot of nuts! That'll be $4, baby! You want fries with that?
I've seen the celery dance across the baseball fields.
You had me at meat tornado.
No, go past this. Past this part. In fact, never play this again.
Okay. what does that mean?
And now it's time for the non-fortune cookie odd news.
So sit back, get everything you need to get from the kitchen. Be sure and empty the bladders. Go to the bathroom because you're in for hell, right?
Odd news.
That's right, everybody. It's time for the non-fortune cookie odd news. Here in this segment, Rich researches the news, he reads the news, and I react to the news. He finds all these weird and wacky stories and keeps them hidden from me, which ensures that all my reactions are my genuine gut reactions to hearing these stories for the very first time. I don't know what's about to happen, you guys don't know what's about to happen, and even Rich doesn't know what's about to happen, because these stories take us down wacky and wild paths, and I'm ready to get started. Where the heck we going to first?
All right. So this story definitely got popular over the past week. Rachel sent this to me. A couple of other people on Twitter sent this to me.
Okay.
This is one everybody's been talking about, so I guess we got to talk about it.
Okay. I have no idea what you're talking about. Maybe.
All right. Well, yeah, we'll see. This one comes from Texas.
Okay, the Lone Star State.
And it has to do with a Walmart.
Okay, Texas and Walmart.
Do you have any Walmart stories you've read recently?
No, I don't. I'm oblivious.
Okay. Well then, Mike, I hope you like the story then.
Okay.
So everyone wanted us to talk about this because this is a true story. When a Texas family went to cut into their daughter's graduation cake over the past weekend, they were surprised to learn that it wasn't cake, but it was actually styrofoam.
How does that even happen?
Only Walmart this could happen.
So, okay. So the big question is this like a cake that they make in the store? Like, you know how sometimes you can go and you can buy, you know, from like their bakery section? Like some supermarkets have bakery sections, or like what? Yeah. Or was this like a pre-made cake? Like what? Like what?
Okay, so here's the story. Marcy Flores ordered a two-tier cake from a Walmart, but when she arrived for pickup, she was told that her order didn't exist. With no more two-tier cakes available, A manager informed Marcy to pick any of the cakes that were ready for purchase. Nellie, who's Marcy's sister, said that she just picked the one cake that was blue because it matched her daughter's school colors. After the graduation ceremony, the family went to a restaurant to eat dinner. After they finished their meals, Marcy went to cut into the cake with a butter knife. However, the knife did not go through the cake at all. That's when their dad took out his pocket knife and he discovered that the cake was made out of styrofoam.
Okay, well, hold on. This is going to sound weird, but I think the strangest thing of the story is not the fact that cake was made out of styrofoam, but that the father thought, I know, I'll use my pocket knife to cut the cake. Isn't that bizarre? You don't think that's bizarre?
No.
That was the best option they had? Was his pocket knife?
You have not met a lot of men with pocket knives then.
My dad has a pocket knife.
People,
good Lord, I would never want to eat food that's been cut by that pocket knife.
Okay, well, maybe not your dad's pocket knife. But I know a lot of people with pocket knives would probably do. They'd like to show off their knife and cut things with them.
It's a little tiny. You can't cut cake with a pocket knife.
Yeah, you could.
No, you can't.
Yeah, it depends on the pocket knife. There's just a knife.
Yeah, he's not pulling out one of a machete over there. It's a little 2-inch blade.
Oh, well, that won't do. No, I'm talking about a real knife.
How big do you think pocket knives are?
You know, you can get a big one.
I've never seen a pocket knife that's, like, bigger than, like, 2 or 3 inches, the blade.
You could get one that could cut a cake.
But to cut a cake?
Yeah.
No.
I don't think it's really that crazy.
I think that's bizarre. They're all standing around, yay, congratulations, and he just fishes in his pocket, pulls out the pocket knife, little tiny dinky thing.
Well, when the butter knife on the table won't cut into the cake, something's
up.
You
get a serrated edge knife or a bread knife or something. Pocket knife.
I think you're fine with the pocket knife. You're fine.
I think it's weird. I think that's the weirdest part of it. The styrofoam cake, I could see that. It was a display cake, and they accidentally packaged it up and put it in the freezer section.
No, see, that's... Styrofoam is so light. How do you not realize that's a cake?
She's stupid.
That's not a cake.
People are stupid.
You must be extremely stupid.
Or maybe they thought, oh, this is just a very light and airy cake.
No.
Maybe...
Even a sheet cake has some weight to it.
Oh, yes, I know. Cakes are heavy.
Styrofoam has nothing to it. Styrofoam can blow away with the simplest... You could blow on this cake and it should be able to move a little bit.
Clearly, it was not a very light styrofoam because the butter knife didn't go through it. So it had to have been like a densely packed styrofoam.
Perhaps. But the point is...
I like how we're getting into like the logistics of this.
Styrofoam feels so much lighter than actual cake.
It does. No, it does.
You should notice a difference.
Look, the people are just stupid. They're cutting the cake with a pocket knife.
I don't think that's... Why is it with you in the pocket knife?
It's weird.
It's not really... You have not met people with pocket knives.
I have.
Other than your dad. No. No.
What?
There are people with pocket knives. They pull it out for everything.
Yeah, but you don't think it's weird? Would you have a piece of cake that was cut with somebody's pocket knife?
If I knew the person really well or something.
No, because you know what you use pocket knives for? You're cutting stuff out in the yard. You're cutting packages and stuff. You wash it off. You wash a pocket knife?
Yeah, you should, or else it's going to go bad. You got to clean it.
I don't know. I think that's the weirdest part of the story.
No, I don't think you haven't met people with pocket knives.
I've met people with pocket knives.
Not, other than your dad.
What type of people have you met with pocket knives? They're using their pocket knives to cut cake?
I've met people.
You've met people?
Yes.
I think it's bizarre. I wouldn't take a piece of cake that was cut with a pocket knife. That's bizarre.
Well, how else are you going to get cake?
Well, apparently not at all at that person's graduation party.
Yeah, well, apparently the cake's styrofoam here. So after processing the situation, the family decided to return to Walmart. Walmart offered her a $60 gift card in return.
I mean, that's a pretty good deal.
That's nice. You know,
well, how much do you think the cake cost?
Well, yeah, well,
it didn't cost $60.
No.
So they made out ahead in that deal. And you just scrape the icing off the top. That's the best part of the cake anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, this is absolutely a win-win situation.
You're only in it for the icing.
Right. Well, I think the icing is the best part of the cake.
However, Nellie said she's still disappointed. She said the moment was simply gone, and she wants more people to see this so that nobody orders a cake from Walmart anymore.
Well, it wasn't the cake that she ordered. It was the cake that she bought from... the pre-made cakes.
Yeah.
So ordering the cake would have been fine if they had actually made the cake.
But unfortunately, it didn't end up well for them. So
that is bizarre, though. Like, how? So obviously, it was a cake meant for a display, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And but somehow it got packaged as a real cake.
Right.
Like, there had to have been a major miscommunication and error in the packaging line.
But for a couple people, too. Like, how about, so the person that moved the cake didn't realize it was extremely light. The person that rings it up on the cashier didn't realize that it was light.
But
the person that takes the cake home didn't realize that the cake was extremely light. Yeah. I just think everybody fails in this case.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, that's what I'm going with.
The point is, don't get cake from a Walmart in Texas.
Don't get cake from Walmart, period.
Walmart
it's not
in Texas sounds like a bad idea in and of itself.
Yeah. Good rule of thumb.
Is that mean to say that?
I
just feel like if you're going to Walmart in Texas, you're asking for a bad time.
I think you're just going, if you're going for Walmart, you're asking for a bad time.
You're taking this a step further.
Yeah.
Just Walmart, period. Yeah. Bad.
Have you ever seen People of Walmart?
Website? Yeah.
Good.
We had that story several weeks ago about the lady drinking booze out of the Pringles can.
Oh, yeah. That's
outside
right.
of Walmart, right?
Yeah.
Just, what was it, last week we had the lady stealing vodka and toilet paper from a Walmart.
Right.
So this is the type of people you run into in Walmart.
Yeah, so I'm good. I'll go over to Target.
I think Walmart is actually like, it's like a breeding ground for idiots.
Yes, I think so.
They're like salmon. They go back to where they came from to have their offspring.
Wow.
Doesn't it seem like weird people gravitate to... Now, I'm getting really offensive here, I feel like, to people that like Walmart. But like, when you have a website named People of Walmart, after the type of people that go to Walmart, there's a problem there.
Yeah.
And now you're telling me you're selling styrofoam cakes? You know, I feel like I'm slightly validated in suggesting that it is a breeding ground of idiots.
Yeah, it's just, I would not recommend going to a Walmart. Go to Target.
Target.
It's much
very
better.
Fancy.
It's much better. I think you have a better experience there, in my opinion.
Do you remember Kmart?
Yes.
What was Kmart? It wanted to be something, and it never was.
It was like...
That was so random.
It was like Target, but with like with more clothes and not really more things that you needed.
It didn't have anything. One of the last Kmart...
It was a Target with things you didn't need.
Yes.
I think that's the best way to explain Kmart.
It was that awkward middle ground between Target and Walmart, and it succeeded at being neither.
Yeah.
The last one that I can remember was in Willow Grove. It was one of the big Kmarts, you know, big Kmart.
Super Kmart,
yeah. And it closed down a few years ago, but like, man, it was hanging in there. I went in there once, and it was like really sad. You know the Plymouth Meeting Mall, how it has like no stores? It was like that, except even worse. I'm just crapping on everything. I just wiped out Texas, Walmart, Kmart, Plymouth Meeting Mall.
Yeah.
Come at me. I will take you down.
Yeah, you are wiping up wiping Texas off the map and Montgomery County off the map.
They deserved it. We deserved it. Anyway.
Well, let's...
I was just on a vendetta.
Yeah. You know what? Your anger sounds like our next story. I think it's a good transition here. We're going to Connecticut in this next one, which is weird. We don't usually get too many stories up in New England.
No, you think New England, you think like classier, right?
Yeah. But this lady was not classy at all. Unhappy with the way her McChicken sandwich was prepared, a Connecticut woman stormed a McDonald's kitchen in an attempt to prepare her own meal.
Oh, yeah.
And in the process, assaulted the restaurant's pregnant manager, according to police.
Kill my bitch in my ultimate form!
I'm gonna f***ing kill you, motherfucker, old style!
Yeah.
She thinks she's gonna make it better than the people making it for her? Come on, now. You don't know what you're doing.
According to investigators, Chanel Hansen purchased a McChicken sandwich at 8 o'clock p.m. on Friday night at the drive-through windows at the drive-through window of a McDonald's. The sandwich, however, apparently did not live up to her expectations.
What is your expectations for McDonald's at 8 o'clock at night?
Yeah, your bar should be really low if you're going to a McDonald's.
Do you go there? This is the thing that always ticks me off. Like, you know what you're getting when you go for fast food. You're not going there expecting to have a sit-down meal at a five-star restaurant, nobody's going to come over there and put the napkin on your lap and pour you, you know, fancy sparkling water. It's McDonald's.
Yeah.
Look, just be happy your food doesn't have a Band-Aid in it.
Wow, that's disgusting. And,
okay, I mean, obviously the food has to be cooked and edible and safe. But if there's a problem, just simply going in and saying, hey, there was a problem with this, solves the issue like 9 out of 10 times. You know what doesn't solve the issue? Is storming into the kitchen and assuming that you're going to be able to make your own sandwich and nobody's going to have anything to say about that.
So she got the sandwich. She's still in the drive-thru here. Okay. So that's when she pulled up, got out of her car, marched into the restaurant, and declared, my food was made wrong!
Oh, jeez.
Yes. The McDonald's manager, who is 29 weeks pregnant, told cops that then Hansen reached over and slapped her in the face.
Why?
Don't make me issue my ultimate force!
Wow.
Any chance you had at a free meal is just gone.
Slap.
Also, I just want to point out, I feel really bad for that lady. She is more than 7 months pregnant, and she is working at a McDonald's, and she gets slapped by an idiot of a customer. That's just the...
Yeah, it's just bam, like that.
Woo! There you go. That's just... I just feel so bad for her. Could you imagine being 7 months pregnant, working at McDonald's, and you're just... And you got slapped on the job? Come on, now. That's sad.
Oh, we're not done.
Does she throw down?
So she slaps the pregnant woman.
Right.
Bam, right there. Yeah.
That's bad. You shouldn't slap pregnant women. How about don't slap women, period?
So then a male employee tried to separate Hansen and the manager, and Hansen turned around and slapped him in the face. Yeah.
Boy.
Slappers only, bitch.
I know. Is that a GoldenEye reference?
Yeah. Wow.
Oh, my God. That's a deep cut.
then, wow, I can't believe the patience on this. Another manager said that he was going to offer Hansen a refund, despite the fact she slapped two of his people.
At that point, they just want to get her out of there.
Yeah.
Before she keeps slapping people.
Then she stated she was going to make the food herself. So Hansen came behind the counter, went to the French fry station, and slapped the person at that position as well.
No. Okay. So I know what's actually happening here. You go to fast food places for one reason and one reason only. You want really salty, really greasy food really quick, and you don't want to do anything to get it. If she is willing to go through the trouble of making her own food, she would have just made her own food at home. Why go out and spend money? You spend money to get food so you don't have to make it, or because you have a craving for it. But the point is convenience, right? I think what she really wanted to do was just slap people, and she wanted an excuse to slap people.
She's Miss Slappy over here. She played too many games of GoldenEye.
She was in the drive-thru, so she's in a hurry. She wants to get her food and go. But somehow she has the time to go in there, assault not one, not two, but three people.
Yes.
On her way to making her own sandwich. This is a lady that's just out to hit people.
The manager said that at this point, McDonald's workers were shouting at her, don't slap the manager again. She's pregnant. According to one of the employees, the angry woman then shouted, quote, don't worry, I have bail money. And
what?
And I don't care if she's pregnant. She made my food wrong.
Don't make me issue my ultimate force.
Wow.
First of all, odds are the manager ain't making your food.
Yeah, that's right. She's a manager.
Secondly, it's really bad if you go around places saying, I have bail money.
Yeah.
If you come prepared with bail money, again, this furthers my point that she's just in it to hit people.
She just wanted to have a slap-a-thon.
She just wanted to have a slap fest. She didn't care about the food.
Yeah.
Rich, she showed up to a fast food place with bail money ready.
Ready to go.
She was just going there to hit people. They could have given her food on a gold bar and she would have found something wrong with it.
Yeah. After being taken into custody, Hansen told police that she was upset that there was absolutely nothing on her McChicken sandwich. She said it was supposed to come with lettuce and mayo, and it didn't.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
All this over lettuce and mayo? Yes. Jesus Christ. Get a packet of mayo and squeeze it on there.
Yeah.
You're willing to make your own sandwich, or you can't just get a condiment packet? Jesus Christ.
How can you forget the lettuce, you bitch?
Yeah, you bitch.
How dare you?
That was my one vegetable for the week.
That's what you get.
Unbelievable. This is just pure insanity.
Yeah.
All this over a wilted single leaf of lettuce.
And mayo.
And mayo.
How dare you?
Really?
She's charged with the breach of peace and assaulting a pregnant woman.
That's a charge?
Yeah.
Assaulting a pregnant woman?
Yep.
Wow. And also, I like breach of peace.
Yeah, that's what they're fancy in Connecticut.
Oh, yeah, all those uppity...
Oh, yes.
All those uppity...
We are arresting you for breach of peace.
You have breached the peace here in our noble town.
We do not like your breaching of our peace. How dare you? Hansen was released from custody after she posted a $5,000 bond.
There you go. Well, she said she had the bail money. That irrationally pisses me off.
She has enough money for a $5,000 bail bond, but she doesn't have enough to fork up for lettuce and mayo.
This is what I mean. She wasn't there for food. She was there to slap people because she was willing. Like, you go to fast food because you want quick, easy food. You don't go there and, you know, take the time to make your own food. If she was willing to take the time to make her own food, she would have just made her own food. She was there to hit people.
Yeah.
It's just a thinly veiled excuse. We found you out, bitch. Stop slapping pregnant women.
Take that.
Get your own mayo. Crazy people.
All right. Coming up next, I've got two stories from a state. And you want to take a guess at what state it is?
Florida?
No.
Louisiana?
No.
No. Is it Pennsylvania?
No.
What the hell state? Those are the only three states.
What state?
Iowa?
Iowa, yeah.
Nobody knows that reference except for us, Rich.
Iowa has two stories here in the non-Fortune Cookie Odd News.
Oh, my God. Wow. That is...
Yeah.
It's one of those states you just forget.
I think states are trying to compete with Florida here.
They really are.
We're going to do this couple story here first. An Iowa couple that decided to leave their young children home alone decided that they did so because they wanted to go have sex in the middle of a bike trail, according to police.
Wrong, 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 wrong. Wrong, 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 wrong. You're wrong.
Well, it was very erotic. Yes, indeed. It was erotic.
How old were the kids?
Let me get to it here. Okay. 31-year-old Rebecca Mecca.
Rebecca Mecca? Yo! Come on! Rebecca Mecca?
The names, man.
Please tell me they named their kids rhyming names. They got to continue the trend. Rebecca Mecca?
Yeah, so...
Oh, my God.
31-year-old Rebecca Mecca... 32-year-old Daniel Walshire
oh, come on.
Was arrested at 1 in the morning when a cop discovered them lying on the ground trysting in a park in North Liberty, which is an Iowa City suburb.
1 in the morning?
Yeah.
Dude, if the kids are young enough, just put them in a stroller and just bring them with you.
The cop noted that Walshire's pants were at his ankles and Rebecca Mecca was on top of him completely nude.
Well, it was very erotic. Yes, indeed. It was erotic.
That was when the cop asked him, where are their children? The pair told police that they just simply left their children at home. The son is 3 and the daughter is 9, according to the cops.
Oh, that's okay.
The daughter not...
The 9-year-old, they would have been fine.
They would have been fine, but it's not good. You're...
I was walking home from school by myself at 9.
You're at that cusp. I would err on the side of caution.
I mean, yes. Preferably, you would not leave the children alone in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Of course.
And only just for you guys to go
I think
some fun in the park.
I think that I'm gonna be a terrible parent. But I feel like it wasn't that big of an issue because, I mean, it was probably going to be over very quickly anyway.
What, are you saying he's a Minuteman?
I mean,
Walshire?
Probably. He sounds like a chump. But, you know, I
feel... Too much Rebecca Mecca.
Too much Rebecca Mecca. But, look, it's one...
Hey, when she gets on top of you, man, that's it. The ride doesn't stop.
She's like a machine. Mecca machine. Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah. What, 1 o'clock in the morning, the kids aren't going to wake up. They'll be fine.
Yeah, they'll be back by 1:20.
Exactly. I think it's weird, though, that they're like, we want to have sex, but it has to be on the bike trail.
Yeah, they really like that bike trail. It's very important.
What about the bike trail? If
nature, I don't know.
Then just have it out in the front lawn.
Like normal people.
That's right. like normal people.
Yes.
But the point that I'm getting at is if it's simply having sex in a public place, you could just walk outside and do it. You don't have to go to the bike trail. Is there something special about the bike trail? Is that where the kids were conceived or something?
I don't know.
Is there some symbolic gesture to having sex on the bike trail? Doesn't make any sense to me.
Also, Walshire was intoxicated. They found out his blood alcohol content was more than 2 times the legal limit.
Well, that explains a lot.
And that he had consumed an entire container of boxed wine on the way there.
Wow.
So he was getting his fun in. He needed to get drunk and have sex.
They could have just done that at home.
But it's something about that park, man. They wanted to have it there.
What is it about this bike trail? Is it like some amazing bike trail?
I don't know. It's just very erotic.
Well, it was very erotic. Yes, indeed. It was erotic.
Is the trail paved with pillows or something? Why go out of your way?
I have some bad news for you, because you may think 9 is fine, but this is grounds for child endangerment, according to the cops. So.
I mean, yes. I mean, obviously it is. But I also feel like at 9, I was doing a lot of stuff. We were roaming around the neighborhood, doing what we wanted, playing with toy guns in the alleys. I probably would have been shot if it was a different decade. You know, just, I don't know. I hate to sound like that. I hate to sound like one of those people who's like, oh.
Back
in my day. You know, when I was
eight. We walked 15 miles to get to school.
Up hills.
Uphill and down hill.
Both ways.
Yeah, through the snow.
Two broken legs.
We crutches. We didn't get up there. What happened?
And then you stopped at the Jewish deli.
I stopped at the Jewish deli. I get lunch. What do you want?
I love how at 8 years old, you're actually 70 years old.
I told you. I jumped right from childhood to old man status.
You went from playing with toys straight to walking with a cane and smoking a pack a day, apparently.
I went to school and then I watched the game shows. What do you want from me?
Yeah. Oh, but, yeah, I'm just going to stop. It sucks that they left their kids there like that. That's not right. They should have just had sex in the front lawn, like normal people.
Like respectable Iowa people.
That's right.
Of course.
Respectable Iowa people. I don't think that exists.
Well, this next story is not a respectable Iowa person. So this story opens up with a weird question.
Okay.
What would you say when a fellow library person turns a corner and spots you furiously wanking away in the library?
Turn around. Walk away.
Well, for Leroy McFarlane, he simply looked at his accuser and said, "Oh, hi."
Oh, hi, Mark.
Oh, hi,
yes.
Mark.
Oh, hi.
I did not.
Yeah. Jerking off. I did not. How dare you?
I did not jerk off.
How dare you?
Oh, hi, Mark.
Yeah. So, 44-year-old Leroy McFarlane looked surprised and tried to cover himself with his sweatshirt when a female witness spotted him, according to a criminal complaint.
Why are you cranking it in the library anyway?
Boy,
what are you looking at? You got Encyclopedia Britannica? You're like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. Look at... what was... Wasn't there one like with the African? There was like African women or something that they were like topless. Ooh,
like
yeah,
every
look at that.
Issue of National Geographic
yeah,
ever.
National Geographic. Yeah, there you go.
See, he's just
look
he's,
at that.
He's pulled out all the National Geographics and he's just going to town.
Ooh, look at that! Yeah,
look at that.
Oh, hi, Mark.
Yeah.
Maybe he found a copy of the Kama Sutra or something.
Well, that requires two people.
Well, I mean, maybe he didn't have another person, so he's like, I'm just going to look at the pictures.
A cop working at the library then approached McFarlane, who apparently kept going.
Wow.
Wow. That's some balls.
Well, it was very erotic. Yes, indeed. It was erotic.
I did not. Oh, hi, Mark.
That's actually kind of impressive.
Yeah, he just kept
that
going.
That he's like... You know, able to keep at it.
As McFarlane was being walked to a cop car.
Was he still doing it?
No, he had clothes on at this point, but a sex toy fell out of his jacket, according to cops.
Well, it was very erotic. Yes, indeed. It was erotic.
Whoops.
Oh,
that
boy.
Not me. Don't worry. That not me.
I did not. Oh, hi, Mark.
I did not do this. I did not. Oh, hi, cop.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. That's just vulgar.
McFarlane is being held in the county jail in lieu of a $1,000 bond. So.
Why?
Libraries, man. People are getting off.
But I get it. Exhibitionism and all that stuff. But why the library?
Yeah.
It's such a bizarre choice. Was he, like, trying to spy on people, like, through the shelves, you know? Like, I want to know what was going through his mind.
I don't know. There must be a section of the library that people are looking at that we aren't, because I never found
the
library.
It's the restricted section.
I never found the library to be that arousing.
What? Literature doesn't get you excited, Rich?
I guess not. Not like this.
Not like that? Just read a good book and you're like, man, I... We're going to stop that sentence.
You know, Nana's coming on the show next week. You're supposed to do something.
I'm not doing that.
Yeah, you're supposed
Look at what happens if you do that. You get arrested. And you don't even get to finish.
All right. I'm just saying, Nana's going to be very disappointed next week.
Oh, well.
Why is there so many people jerking off in libraries? That's like the second story we've had.
Second is not that much, though.
It's weird when it's people...
You make it sound like it's every week. Every week somebody's beating it in a library.
Yeah. Why did this become a thing all of a sudden?
I guess they figure it's quiet. It's nice and...
Please, everyone,
I need complete silence.
I need complete silence.
To reach climax. I can't perform if there's too much noise. Get stage fright, the little guy. He needs peace and quiet.
I need silence.
That's why I was impressed. He was able to keep going after two people approached him. Oh, my God. I need silence. Quiet. Quiet on the set. They may now begin. Oh my God!
Just as long as he's silent, everything's okay.
Silent.
You can look, but no.
Yeah, you can.
Don't make a noise.
Don't. Shh. Don't say anything. Just be quiet. Just accept it.
It's like we're hunting rabbits. You got to be quiet.
Be very, very quiet. I'm jerking off.
Oh my God!
Oh, why?
Why?
Why
Elmer Fudd touching himself? Great. This is what we've devolved to here on the On News.
What's up, Doc?
Something's up, man.
He's doing. He's just cocking his shotgun. Oh, man.
Okay.
Wow.
All right.
That was something else.
Yeah. But before we wrap it up, I got to go over our obligatory Florida story. Florida always has to comment, so here's their story of the week.
Now, who is this guy in Florida?
It's Florida, and they're crazy.
A Florida man is facing a domestic battery rap after he got angry with his girlfriend and decided to cover her in ketchup in bed, according to cops.
Big size French fries, how they love love tomatoes, so dress them up with Heinz ketchup. Ketchup loves potatoes. Ketchup loves potatoes.
Yeah, an odd choice here to confront your girlfriend.
I mean, ketchup is delicious.
You bitch, take this ketchup.
So, oh wait, was it was as a sexual act though, right?
No, he's angry at her.
Oh, he's angry at her.
Yes.
Oh, I missed that part.
Investigators said that 37-year-old Peter Wagman and his 41-year-old girlfriend have recently been in arguments over infidelity from each other. So they both assume they're cheating.
Oh, this is a match made in heaven.
Yeah, great.
So they're both cheating and suspecting the others of cheating.
Yep. The couple have been together on and off for 11 years. At 4:45 in the morning on Sunday, cops reported that the victim awoke to being ketchup being poured on her by Wagman, who was yelling, "That's what you get, you bitch!"
What? What does that? Yeah. What does that prove? What does
I
that show?
I don't know. But take that, all this ketchup. Take that, you bitch.
How they love tomatoes, so dress them up with Heinz ketchup. Ketchup loves potatoes. Ketchup loves potatoes.
You know, that's a half measure. That's what you want to do when you want to annoy someone, but you don't want to, you know, do anything too serious.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's sort of like a wuss out, you know?
When police arrived at the residence, they found that the woman was covered in ketchup. Wagman then denied that he was responsible.
So how'd the ketchup get on her?
Yeah, interesting. Please explain this story. How did...
Well, when she went to bed, she took her nightly bottle of ketchup with her. She can't sleep without it. And it just opened up and spilled everywhere.
Yes. Very, very plausible story.
Wrong, 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 wrong. Wrong, 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 wrong. You're wrong.
What, you don't like a little bit of ketchup before you go to bed? Just pour it into a glass and delicious. Oh, God, that sounds awful. And I love ketchup.
A patrolman noted that Wagman had ketchup stains in his right pocket of his pants.
What, are you an idiot or something?
I guess he left it open then.
Jesus, what is... Come on.
Yeah, you come on. If you're going to do something like this, you got to keep it closed, then open it before your attack. You don't leave it open the whole time.
But he carried it in his pocket? Why? You're just getting it from the fridge and bringing it upstairs.
Is that a ketchup bottle in your pocket, or are you happy to see me?
Oh, God, why is it red? What is that? He was rubbing it too hard at the library.
Yeah, woo. Just, you know.
Gotta lubricate. Anyway...
Don't try it with ketchup, though.
No, but, like, what is wrong with this guy?
Yeah.
Why did he put it in his pocket?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he had to multitask. I don't know. Yeah.
All you're doing is taking it from the fridge and you're going to the bedroom. Just carry it in your hands. Don't put it in your pocket. And you're so bad at committing crimes, you were literally caught red-handed.
Red-pocketed,
sorry.
Yeah. Wagman, who was released from the county jail... has pleaded not guilty to the domestic battery count. A judge has ordered him to have no contact with the victim. Both Wagman and his girlfriend have both been previously arrested for battering each other.
Jesus.
Why are you two still together? Stop it. You guys have
that's
both
awful.
Have charges of battery against each other.
Yeah. You're both physically harming each other. It's
Why
time to call it quits.
Yeah. Just leave. End it.
I don't know. I don't know what could be keeping them together. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. It's their
mutual love of ketchup.
Yeah, I guess that's the only thing, because I can't
explain
it.
It's a match made in heaven.
A match made with ketchup.
That's right.
Big size French fries, how they love tomatoes. So dress them up with Heinz ketchup. Ketchup loves potatoes. Ketchup loves potatoes.
That's a bizarre song.
Yes, it is.
No, but ketchup loves tomatoes. Ketchup is made out of tomatoes.
No, ketchup loves potatoes.
Oh, potatoes.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm deaf. I thought I was saying ketchup loves tomatoes. I'm like, this doesn't make any sense. It's made out of tomatoes.
No, ketchup loves potatoes.
Ketchup loves potatoes.
According
it's
to,
true.
This is according to Stoppin' Tom's Connors. What a name. Stompin' Tom Connors.
Stompin' Tom Connors.
Yeah, that's the artist.
Is this, who is this person?
An obscure...
It's just a YouTube person?
Yes. He wrote
and he
a
made a song about ketchup.
Yep.
I mean, there's a song about barbecue sauce.
Though he needs to listen to this story, because apparently ketchup isn't all loving, apparently. This is...
Well, it said ketchup loves potatoes, not ketchup loves whoever this lady is.
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah. No love here for the Florida girlfriend here. And there you go. That'll end it. That's what I have for you this week in the non-Fortune Cookie Odd News. But before we officially wrap this episode up, let's go over what have we learned on this episode of the Crispy Noodle Podcast.
As your body grows bigger,
your mind must flower.
It's great to learn,
because knowledge is power.
All right, Mike, what have you learned?
Well, I learned that ketchup loves potatoes, not tomatoes. That doesn't make any sense.
That would be like you love yourself or something.
Yeah, well, you do need to love yourself.
Yeah, but...
That was weirdly profound.
You got to be careful, because I think that's what Iowa library people will use to justify their behavior.
Yeah, you know, I take it back. You don't love yourself. At least not in libraries.
Yeah.
That's weird. But we discovered why people do jerk off in libraries. It's the silence. It's the only way they can reach climax.
Yeah.
Is to have complete and utter silence.
I need complete silence.
Not a peep from anyone. But we also learned that...
do not avert your eyes.
Maintain eye contact, but don't say a word. I feel like that is a real world kink somehow. We also learned something about bail money. If you have bail money set aside and you bring it with you, you have a problem.
Yeah, you're looking for trouble.
Yeah. Don't do it. Whatever you're about to do, don't do it.
Yeah.
We also learned that Walmart is bad, period.
Oh, I knew that. Yeah. Stop it. Don't go to Walmart.
Yeah.
It's not good.
We took it a step further. We found out there's a breeding ground for idiots. And yeah. They return there every year to spawn more idiots.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. And if you're somehow offended by that, explain to me why there's a website, peopleofwalmart.com. I'll fight you.
Go to Target.
Target. We also learned that Rich does an uncanny impression of an old guy at a Jewish deli.
Yeah.
It's almost like you've been practicing for 30 years.
I practiced this my whole life. What do you want?
Rich, you found your true calling. Yes. To be the old guy at a Jewish deli counter. If only that were an actual job, right?
Yeah.
And finally, speaking of your Jewish deli impression, we learned that there is a lot of animation involved in talking, and that we have deduced a very scientific finding here, that there is a clear bell-shaped curve across Europe and Eurasia that correlates to which limbs people use to talk and how active those limbs are in the conversation process.
I think we can develop a theory on this. I think it works.
I think we got to pitch it to some scientific academic journals.
Yep.
We're going to be published in How to Talk Academic Weekly.
Yes.
It's a very popular journal. Yeah.
Established journal.
That's right. Peer-reviewed, of
yes,
course.
Yes, of course.
By each other.
That counts.
I'm sure it counts, right? The point is, look for our extensive research coming to the academic journals near you.
Yes. And there you go. That's what we've learned on this episode of the Crispy Noodle Podcast.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Yes, sir.
I don't if I know what we did.
Oh, man. There you go. Another great episode in the books. Thank you guys for tuning in to another crazy episode of the Crispy Noodle Podcast. If you like what you heard, make sure you go to our webpage. First off, our website, thecrispynoodle.com. Make sure to go to our Facebook page, The Crispy Noodle, our Twitter page, at The Crispy Noodle, and follow us on our Instagram page, at The Crispy Noodle Podcast, so you're always in the know whenever we have some interesting news to share or any announcements, anything like that. Make sure you follow us on all those platforms.
That's right. You can also subscribe to our channel on YouTube, where you can find videos, interviews, best bits, and a whole lot more. But most importantly, remember to subscribe to the Crispy Noodle Podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and now Spotify. That's right, the biggie. It's available everywhere. Search for, download, and subscribe to the Crispy Noodle Podcast on a variety of podcast services to get the latest episodes downloaded for free every Thursday. Once again, subscribe to the Crispy Noodle Podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Spotify.
That's right, and we also have a SoundCloud page where we have the mini noodles, the best bits of the show, shrunk down into a quick 2-minute promo that you can easily listen to and share with others, the craziness that is the Crispy Noodle Podcast.
That's right. You can also get in touch with us individually on Twitter. I'm at Mikey Costanzo, MikeyCostanzo.
And I'm at Rich Liebig, RichLiebig. Find us on the Twitters. Let us know what you want us to talk about on the next episode of the Crispy Noodle Podcast. And personally, got to promote this one more time. The 24-hour Game Show Marathon is this weekend. Make sure you go to GameShowMarathon.com and watch all the craziness that happens as we play 24 game shows in 24 hours. And donate a little bit towards Child's Play, which gives toys and video games to kids that are in hospitals and shelters all over the country. So please do whatever you can to donate and watch our crazy shenanigans this weekend. We start at noon on Saturday and go until noon on Sunday. This weekend, go to GameShowMarathon.com.
That's right. Donate. It's important.
Yes. Every little bit helps. But for now, it's time to wrap this up. This has been the Crispy Noodle Podcast. Let us be the crispy noodle in your vegetarian salad of life and boring news. That'll do it. We'll see you guys next week.
See you guys
later.
Some of us have great stories, pretty stories that take place at lakes with boats and friends and noodle salad. A lot of people, that's their story. Good times, noodle salad.
Hello, it is I, your good friend and former President Barack Obama. It's been a while. I'm joined by the leader of the Ghost Clergy, Cardinal Copia.
How you doing, United States of America?
No, well, I'm well, but now you may be asking yourself,
why are we here?
Well, it's 2019 and nothing makes sense anymore. But anyway, in my retirement and during his infernal time away from the clergy, we've both been listening to a few podcasts.
Ones that will make the asses wobble!
Yes, those are good ones, but we also need ones that bring us hope and change. One in particular with sports, entertainment, and odd news.
You give them a listen and a clappity clap, yes?
Yes, a round of applause for our favorite podcast.
The Crispy Noodle Podcast 2019!
Oh.